So again, thank you everybody so much for joining us today. We have a fantastic presentation for you, so much information. We always record our webinars, and after the webinar is finished, we will send you a link to that recording and all of the slides. So you should get those in whatever email you registered with later on today. So look forward to that. I'm Michelle Morris with Consolidated Planning Group. I have with me today Nitra and Sarah. They are from Texas Workforce Solutions Vocational Rehab Services, and they are certified as Social Security counselors. So they have great information to be able to share with us. And hopefully you're going to have a lot of your questions answered today. Pardon me. As we're going through this presentation, we are in webinar mode, so we cannot hear you or see you, but we know you're out there, and you can put any questions or comments that you have in the chat box. We'll get to as many of those as possible, probably more at the end, so we can get through the information first, but we'll get to your questions as we can. So first of all, I want to let you know, again, if you are listening on our podcast, and you would like a copy of these slides, you can email us contact@cpgcares.net, and we'll send out those slides to you. So Consolidated Planning Group, we are a financial planning firm that focuses on families with special needs loved ones. We're located in Sugar Land, Texas, which is just outside of Houston. And we serve families all across Texas and all across the United States. We have over 30 years of experience with insurance and financial services. We are members of the Million Dollar Roundtable, which just means it's just an industry thing that means that a lot of families trust us to help them. We're also members of the Special Needs Planning Academy, and we are nationally certified as Social Security advisors as well. We help families think about what they need to do to plan for their loved ones, lifetime protection plans and care plans, planning for that transition that happens when your child leaves high school and goes out into the real world. We help with ABLE accounts and making sure you have your money in the right buckets. And of course, we always want to educate and advocate for families, because there's just not a lot out there, not a lot of people out there who help you understand the ins and outs. As a matter of fact, when it comes to special needs planning, there are only about 200 family planning. Let me start over. There's only about 200 in the United States financial advisors that focus on special needs planning out of 263,000 total. So it's like fewer than a tenth of a percent of all the financial advisors in the United States who focus on special needs planning like we do. So you're definitely in the right place. One thing that we want to put up front in your minds, because we know that people always worry, who's going to take care of your child when you no longer can? So we want you to think about planning early, making plans ahead of time so that when you're in the thick of it, you don't have to worry about those minor details, which are huge details, right? So develop your plan early. It makes it so much easier in the long run, and you can make more of a difference in over time. Think about what's going to happen after high school. What are those educational and vocational and residential options out there? Plan ahead. There could be waiting lists, and make careful considerations before you just say, oh, his older sibling is going to take care of him. It's not always the best answer for every family. So we help families with these kinds of things, and we'll give you links and information to contact us for a personalized meeting at the end of this webinar. But today we want to just turn over the controls and let Nitra and Sarah talk to you about benefits and work incentives and how we can help you. So they're going to take over. Like I said, this is being recorded. You will receive a copy of the slides and the recording later on today. Without any further ado, Sarah, it looks like you're going to take over. So go right ahead.
Thank you, Michelle. As Michelle said, I'm Sarah Kendall, and I do work for Vocational Rehabilitation. And today we're going to talk to you about supplemental security income and working. So have you ever heard any of these things? If I go to work, I lose my benefits. How about I can only make a certain amount of money or work a certain number of hours each month, or I lose my benefits? I must keep a dollar of SSI or I lose Medicaid. I need to get a letter from Vocational Rehabilitation saying I can't work. Or if I go to work and then I stop working, I won't be able to get my cash benefits or my Medicaid or Medicare back. So if you have ever heard any of these things or thought any of these things, we have good news for you today. Your child who's on supplemental security income can absolutely go to work if he or she wants to. And there is help for them to get a job. And we'll talk about that at the end of this presentation with our agency, Vocational Rehabilitation. But very importantly, for someone on supplemental security income, they can actually earn a living wage and still be attached to the supplemental security income program and continue to receive free Medicaid. So some basic terms we're going to use today that you'll need to know is SSA, which stands for the Social Security Administration. SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income, and that's the disability benefit program we'll be talking about today. And SGA, which stands for Substantial Gainful Activity. This is a benchmark number that only Social Security uses. And it determines whether someone can get onto SSI, Supplemental Security Income, after age 18. And that's really the only effect SGA has on supplemental security income is when you're applying to get on. If you're earning above $1,470 monthly in gross earnings in 2023, if you're not blind, or $2,460 if you are blind in 2023, you're not going to qualify for supplemental security income over the age of 18, regardless of the severity of the disability. And we'll explain why in just a moment. So Social Security runs actually three programs under SSI, two of which are disability programs and one of which is not. There's childhood supplemental security income. That's for kiddos age 0 up to age 18. That is a disability-related benefit program. There's adult SSI. That's for age 18 up to age 65, and that is a disability-related program. And then there's something called SSI Aged for people who are age 65 or older, and that's an income-based program. It is not disability-related at all. But supplemental security income benefits are not disability-only benefit programs. For adults over age 18, SSI or supplemental security income is a benefit based on your inability to earn substantial gainful activity due to your disability benefit program. So adult SSI is really all about working. Childhood SSI, however, for those under age 18, is awarded when the parent's income is not adequate to provide food and shelter to the child with a disability. If a child under age 18 is earning that substantial gainful activity, that $1,470 or above in 2023, at the time of application, that minor child under age 18 would be denied SSI. And as I said, SGA is only important when you're applying for supplemental security income for adult SSI. It doesn't have anything to do with the work activity at all. Okay. So there's a difference between childhood SSI and adult SSI. And very basically, for those under age 18, Social Security is looking at the functional limitations of that child under age 18 at home and in school in comparison to children the same age without a disability. Adult SSI, on the other hand, that's for ages 18 up to 65, looks at whether the disability impacts the ability to earn that substantial gainful activity amount when they're employed. And it also looks at whether the individual could obtain a job earning that much money with their current skills and abilities anywhere in the United States. So, for instance, when you're under age 18 and you get childhood SSI due to your functional limitations, and then you reach age 18, you may not be eligible for adult SSI because the disability that you have may not impact your ability to earn substantial gainful activity when you're over age 18. And we see this most commonly with children with mild learning disabilities who do receive childhood SSI, but would not be qualified for adult SSI in most cases. Excuse me. You're not automatically eligible for adult SSI just because you got childhood SSI, but the process when you turn age 18 to get into adult SSI is done behind the scenes. It's called an ex parte determination, where Social Security really looks at your medical records to see if your disability, and they look at your finances to see if your disability and finances meet their criteria. So you can be proactive as a parent. If your child is about to turn age 18, you can get in touch with Social Security a few months before they turn age 18 and ask them to start that process to get adult SSI. There are some deeming relationships in supplemental security income, and deeming means that the income of someone who's related to someone else or has a relationship with someone else has, and that person has a legal obligation to provide food and shelter to that other person. And that can impact someone's eligibility for SSI, or it can impact the amount of SSI the person might be able to get. And in supplemental security income, there's three relationships where one party's income is deemed to the other party. And that's a parent to a minor child. So minor child is under age 18 in the Social Security world. So if you are thinking, well, my child applied for SSI but was denied, one of the reasons could be because your income as a parent was and resources were too high for your child to qualify for any SSI. The other deeming relationships are a spouse to a spouse and a sponsor to an immigrant. So again, after the person turns 18, they become an adult on their own in the Social Security world, and deeming no longer applies. So once the child turns 18, only their income is counted, not the income of any other party who might be legally obligated to provide food and shelter to them. But what does happen when that child turns 18, if they're living at home with you, with the parent, and they're not paying you room and board, something called in-kind support and maintenance can occur. And in-kind support and maintenance is when the person doesn't pay room and board and they're over age 18, they're an adult on their own in the Social Security world, but they're not paying room and board to someone, someone else is paying their room and board. In those cases, the amount of SSI the adult would get, who's over the age of 18, will be reduced by one third. So this year, the amount that an adult over the age of 18 would get, who doesn't pay room and board, would be $609.34. Now, you can avoid in-kind support and maintenance by having your child pay you rent and their fair share of groceries. You could set up a rental agreement with them and take 3 months of grocery receipts, divide it by the number of people in the household, and have them pay that amount. And that will allow that person to get the full amount of supplemental security income rather than the in-kind support and maintenance amount. Or your child could open up an Achieving Better Life Experience account, an ABLE account, which the Consolidated Planning Group can help give you information about. And they could pay their room and board out of that account. And the ABLE account is a great way to avoid in-kind support and maintenance because anybody can put money into someone's ABLE account, Achieving Better Life Experience account. So you as a parent could put $275 of your own money into your child's ABLE account, and your child could turn around, take that money out and hand it right back to you, and they have paid you room and board. And that's absolutely legal in the Social Security world and in the Medicaid world as well. The purpose of SSI is to provide someone who has a disability that meets Social Security's definition with a small amount of cash each month to help them get food and shelter. That's the whole purpose of it. Again, it's not just because you have a disability. It's because your disability impacts your ability to earn that substantial gainful activity, and that would be enough for you to buy your own food and shelter. So any other money that you have coming in, that the person has coming in, whether it's gifted to the, if whether you gift your child money, whether they win it at bingo, whether they're working, or they might get some other kind of unearned income like child support, all of that income is going to impact the amount of supplemental security income that the individual can receive, or if they can receive any SSI at all. And SSI has a very strict resource limit per month. Person can have no more than $2,000 a month in resources, or $3,000 if they're married and they're both on SSI. Excuse me, just went too fast.
Sorry, I was trying to look at the question in the chat and I think it changed.
Oh, that's okay. Don't worry about it. That's not a problem. But that resource limit is very strict. You can't open a whole bunch of different accounts for your child and put money away and think, oh, that's good. You know, I have $5,000, but it's all in these different accounts. No, it's $2,000 per month altogether. And resources are, for Social Security's purposes, are anything that can be converted to cash in a 20-day period, not counting personal items like antiques and jewelry. But they're talking about things like those savings bonds that grandma gave your son or daughter when they were young, and you've stuck in a savings, box or put aside. When those mature, your child's Social Security number is on those savings bonds, and that income is going to count against their supplemental security income cash benefit. But the main point here is that supplemental security income was never designed for someone to live on. It's not enough money for anybody to live on, and it was not designed that way. If someone can go to work, that's great. If they can't, well, they have supplemental security income to help them out in terms of getting food and shelter every month. To qualify for SSI, you have to meet 5 steps of a sequential evaluation, and you have to meet that financial resource limit of $2,000 a month or under. So, free money, not free. There is an immense amount of work that goes into keeping track of earnings, overpayments from Social Security, and the amount of resources you have. One of the most common statements that both Nitra and I hear from parents is, and we've heard this many times, this is ridiculous. It's like a full-time job keeping track of all of this. And it is, unfortunately, almost like a full-time job. And the problems will not end. There will be constant communications, many of which will be confusing from Social Security. And if your child is working, they probably will get an overpayment at some point from Social Security. And once you get one issue in Social Security straightened out, another one pops up. It's kind of like that whack-a-mole game. As soon as you whack-a-mole down, another one pops up. And that's very much like Social Security. So if your child is not on supplemental security income yet, but you're thinking about maybe they should apply when they turn 18, you want to think carefully about that, because there's a lot of work involved in these programs. So let's get into the work incentives, which is what you're here to hear about, and how people can go to work when they're on supplemental security income and keep their cash benefit for a long time, but certainly keep their Medicaid for an even longer time. So there's some basic deductions for everybody, and we'll show you the SSI formula. SSI is reduced $1 for every $2 after the first $20 or $65. There are some additional work incentives that let the individual keep more cash. And we're going to talk about each one of these. They're the student earned income exclusion, the impairment related work expense, the blind work expense, and the plan to achieve self-support. Here is what the SSI formula looks like. And this is how Social Security figures out how much your cash benefit should be each month. It's four sections. And the first section is any unearned income you have. That would be child support, cash gifts. It could be that your child receives Social Security disability insurance or another type of benefit from Social Security. That would all go in unearned income. And then the second section is the gross earned income that you make. And Social Security always figures out how much cash benefit you should get based on the gross earnings, never the net. And in this section, you see the work incentives begin to come into play, like the student earned income exclusion, the impairment related work expense, and the blind work expense. Now, everybody gets something called a general income exclusion. That's a $20 exclusion from your earned income. And everybody gets an earned income exclusion or a $65 deduction from your earnings. The third section of this formula is where you add your unearned income to your earned income. And there's another work incentive in there, the plan to achieve self-support. And you get the amount of income that Social Security is going to count against your SSI cash benefit for the month. They're going to adjust it depending on how much all of this formula shows. The fourth section is where you put the base SSI rate in, and people are generally awarded 914. That's the full SSI amount. 60934, that's if you don't pay room and board, or 1371, that's for a couple both on SSI who are married. There are some people who get $30 if they're in a congregate living setting, like a state-supported living center, or an intermediate care facility for individuals with intellectual disabilities. But for the most part, people will be receiving one of these three amounts. And no matter how much the person is receiving, when you're trying to figure out what the adjusted cash benefit is, you put in these award amounts, not what the person is actually getting. Then you take away the countable income from that third section, and that gets you the adjusted cash benefit. And we're going to show you examples of this. So the great thing about supplemental security income, even though as you earn money, your cash benefit gradually goes down, you will always, always have more money when you're working than if you had just relied on SSI alone. So let's get into the work incentives. How about there's no incentive for students to try working? Actually, students have a special rule that lets them keep more of their SSI and maybe all of it when they work. It's called the student earned income exclusion.
Yikes.
That's okay. Stop moving this.
I just wanted to let everybody know they're asking about the rental agreement template. We also have one of those, but for some reason I can't go type in the chat anymore. So okay. We have one of those. Go ahead.
Just hang on there. Okay. So to get the student earned income exclusion or SEIE, you have to be under the age of 22, regularly attending school. And you can earn, well, you can earn anything you want, but up to $2,220 a month, up to $8,950 a year in the earned income is not counted in that formula, which is really great that I just showed you. You have to request the student earned income exclusion. You're not automatically granted it just because you're going to school. Social Security doesn't know your child's going to school. You have to tell them, or your child has to tell them. There's no formal form for this. You just write a letter requesting the student earned income exclusion, and you have to include proof of attendance at the school and include your first paycheck. That's very important. You can't request the student earned income exclusion until you've already gotten a paycheck. Regularly attending school means this. If you're in grade 7 through 12, you're attending physically at least 12 hours a week. If you're in college or university, at least 8 hours physically a week in class. If you're in a training program like a vocational technical school or apprenticeship, then it's 12 hours a week or 15 hours a week if the course involves shop practice, if you're putting together and pulling apart computers or something like that. Or for less time, if you have a doctor's note saying that you can't go to school these number of hours. And for college and university, online university counts. And the GED counts as well. Homeschooling also counts as long as you're following Texas homeschooling regulations. So here's an example of that formula without the student earned income exclusion. This person has no unearned income, so we put $0 in that first section. They are earning $1,300 a month. Now they get a $20 general income exclusion. That lowers their countable income for Social Security's purposes to $1,280 a month. Then they get the earned income exclusion of $65, and that lowers, their countable earned income to $1,215 a month. Then, and they have no work incentives to apply, just their general income exclusion and their earned income exclusion. Now we have $1,215 in countable earned income, but then you get to divide that by two. That leaves us with $607.50, and that's all Social Security is going to count against the cash benefit, the SSI cash benefit. They're not going to count the entire $1,300. They're going to count $607.50. So you go to the third section, no countable unearned income, zero. Countable earned income, $607.50. No pass plan, so they have countable income of $607.50. When we take that away from the $914, they're left with an adjusted cash bonus for that month of $306.50. That means they're getting their $1,300 in gross earned income plus a cash bonus of $306.50 from supplemental security income. But let's look at what happens when that person uses the student earned income exclusion. Remember, they were getting $306.50, but with the student earned income exclusion, they get their entire $914. Because they can deduct up to this year, $2,220 a month, and they're only earning $1,300, so they can deduct that entire amount. The rest of this formula is zeroed out, and that means they get their $1,300 in gross earned income plus a huge cash bonus of $914 from Social Security. So the student earned income exclusion is a great work incentive that any child under the age of 22, regularly attending school, who gets SSI, who is working, should be using. Okay, now on to another myth. If I need a service or item related to my disability to work, I can't do that because I can't afford it. All I get is SSI. Well, there are work incentives that will return up to half or of the out-of-pocket expenses to the individual or even more in the form of the monthly cash benefit. These are the impairment-related work expense, or IRWE, and the blind work expense, or BWE. The impairment-related work expense is an expense for an item or service that is directly related to enabling the person with a disability to remain in the job. So somebody has to be working to get the IRWE. The impairment-related work expenses have to be paid out of the person's pocket ahead of time in order for them to get this work incentive. And it has to be paid from the person's pocket. It can't be paid for by another source like the Health and Human Services Commission or my own agency, Texas Workforce Solutions Vocational Rehabilitation Services. And the cost must be reasonable. Up to half the money that you pay for those expenses will come back to you in the form of that cash benefit. And here's some very common impairment-related work expenses. These are not all the IRWEs by any means. They're just common ones. The cost of prescription drugs, paratransit. If your child gets picked up at the door and then dropped off where they work at the door of that employer's agency, then that's paratransit. Job coaching could be an impairment-related work expense. Mileage to and from work. If you have to drive your child to and from work because your child is unable to drive and they have no other means of transportation available, that could be an impairment-related work expense. If your child drives a modified vehicle, that's an impairment-related work expense for as long as they work and are on supplemental security income. Any medical equipment or medical services that wouldn't be paid for by Medicaid can be an impairment-related work expense. So here's an example of using the impairment-related work expense. This person works 30 hours a week at $8 an hour, and Social Security figures out estimated income by taking the hours a week someone works times the hourly pay times 4.333. That's the way they always do it. And you have to use that formula to get the correct or close to correct adjusted cash benefit. So this person's making $1,040 a month. They spend $150 a month for paratransit services to get to and from work. They have a $3 copay monthly on their medication, and that gives them a total of $153 in IRWIs. So let's look at what happens when the person doesn't use the impairment-related work expense versus when they do. Here's without the IRWI. This person has no unearned income, so that section is zeroed out. Their gross earned income is $1,040. Well, they get their general income exclusion deduction of $20 and their earned income exclusion of $65, which lowers their countable income to $955. But then we get to divide that by two. That leaves us with $478 in countable earned income. And that's how much Social Security is going to use to figure out the adjusted cash benefit. If we take the 478 away from the 914, they get a cash bonus at the end of the month of $436. Again, they get their gross earned income of $1,040 plus this cash bonus of $436. But remember, they had that $153 in impairment-related work expense. Let's see what happens to that 436 when we apply that IRWI. That 436 changes into $513 because the impairment-related work expense brings their countable income down to 802. And when we divide that by two, it lowers that countable income to 401. So, 436 to 513, well, that's not that much more money. Well, let's look at how much more money it is. They get they pay a total of $1,836 a year in IRWIs. One half of that amount is $918 a year. The adjusted cash benefit, remember, is 513. That's $77 more than the 436. The reimbursement for the IRWI from SSA totals $924 a year, $77 in an additional cash benefit times 12 is 924. So Social Security, in essence, is reimbursing the customer more than half of the cost of their paratransit and their copay and medication. Things that they would have to use whether they had supplemental security income or not. So this is another huge benefit to someone getting supplemental security income who's working. Then you have the blind work expense, or BWI. This is much like an IRWI, but you do have to be considered statutorily blind by Social Security to get the blind work expense. And there are a lot more exclusions that are allowed, including federal taxes. In Texas, we don't take state taxes, so just federal taxes, but that is a blind work expense. Any reader services, any form of transportation. It doesn't have to be paratransit. It can be a public bus. It can be a driver. It can be you taking your child to and from work. Doesn't matter. Any form of transportation. The cost of the service animal's care, if there is a service animal involved. Meals consumed at work are a blind work expense. Truly, almost anything can be a blind work expense. So let's look at an example of the blind work expense. The person is earning about $2,080 a month. They've got a good job, but they do have expenses related to their disability. They spend $150 a month for driver services. They have spent $50 a month for a public bus pass. There's approximately $435 in federal taxes taken out of the $2,080. They spend $109 for lunch over the month, and that counts as a blind work expense. And they spend $40 for their iPhone, and that's a blind work expense. They have $784 in blind work expenses. And you're going to see how impactful this particular work incentive is. Without the blind work expense, they don't get a cash benefit. Their 2080, you take your general income exclusion of 20, your earned income exclusion of 65, and divide that by two, you're left with $998 in countable earned income. And that is over the 914. So you don't get a cash benefit. But remember, they had all those blind work expenses, $784. What happens to that $0 cash benefit when they use the blind work expense? Ah, it turns into that zero, turns into $700 in a cash bonus. So the blind work expense, when applied, drops that countable earned income to $214. Remember, it was $998. Now it's $214. And when we take that away from 914, you get $700 in a cash bonus. So this person is getting their 2080 in gross earned income and $700 in the cash bonus. It's pretty good. And now I'm going to let Nitra Davis Moore take over, and she's going to talk to you about PASS reporting, what the responsibilities are, representative payee, and a little bit about our own agency. Take it away, Nitra.
So Nitra,
I've been answering questions in the chat.
Yes, she has been answering those questions in the chat. So Sarah, if you want to take over that.
I will do that.
Fantastic.
I was finishing up one question in there. I think I spelled Lyft right. I don't know if I did. Sarah, you are muted. So I don't know what you were saying, but
I can finish that question.
Oh, I put it in there. I just don't know if I spelled Lyft right. I know it's not L-I-F-T. I know, I think there's a Y in it or something. So the other work incentive that is available is the plan to achieve self-support, also known as PASS plan. Let's see if my mouse is gonna let me go. There we go. I did it. A little lag. So on the PASS plans, you can be working, but you don't have to be working to have a PASS plan. The hiccup about PASS plans is you must have a specific employment goal attached to the idea of having a PASS. And you need items or services to help you gain employment or even maintain employment. Maybe you've been for a car, for example. That would be something that you would obviously need to save up for. A lot.
It looks like Nitra.
A lot of us don't just have, you know, funds for some income to create.
It looks like she's having some bandwidth issues. So I'm going to go ahead and turn off my video to help hopefully save some bandwidth. But when I hit my video, it moved along the screen. So hopefully when Nitra comes back, she'll be able to jump back to where she was. Looks like we might have lost her. Sarah, if you wanted, there you are. All right. I'm going to stop my video, Nitra. You need to go back a little bit. Sarah, can you jump in and take over maybe?
I can take over. Yes, so sorry.
I think I'm here. I don't know what happened.
Here we go. Give me your...
Can you guys hear me?
I'm sorry. Yes, I got it. Okay, so where were we? On PASS. So I assume that you covered that other slide, but the PASS savings that you have to be spent on what Social Security has approved you to spend them on. And you have to purchase whatever it is you're saving for in the timeline that you told Social Security you would spend it on. Social Security will review these plans once a year at a minimum. The PASS can be an excellent tool for somebody who's very organized or has a very strong, stable support system. Not good if all the person has as support is paid staff. And students who want to go to college or individuals who want to go into their own business can be really good candidates for a plan to achieve self-support. You don't have to have a job to have a plan to achieve self-support, but you do have to have an employment goal. Again, we don't see many plans to achieve self-support in Texas, primarily because the agency that Nitra and I work for, Texas Workforce Solutions Vocational Rehabilitation Services, pays for individuals with disabilities to go to college. And we will pay the tuition and room and board. So we don't see that many passes. We do see a few when we have customers who are wanting to be self-employed and go into their own business. Again, we do pay, my agency, Vocational Rehabilitation Services, pays for a lot of expenses for starting self-employment, but not all of those expenses can be paid for with our funding dollars. So a PASS plan can be good for that. Another great thing that somebody can save for in a plan to achieve self-support is a car. If you're driving your child to and from work and they could drive, they just haven't learned yet, hey, we can help you. Vocational rehabilitation can help you. We can help that your child get their driver's license. And they could save for a car in the PASS plan. Okay, and I don't seem to have control. Michelle, give me control. Thank you.
Right.
Okay. And let's look at an example of using PASS in the formula. Larissa is a customer of ours, and she's going to cosmetology school to become a nail technician. She has a current job earning $800 a month, and her cost to get started in the business that we won't cover, my agency Vocational Rehab won't cover, would be $1,210. So she's also saving $8,500 for a car. She has some PASS expenses. Her parents currently give her $50 a month just to help her out. And she's going to put that money into a PASS. And she has some savings. She's going to put a little bit of that in a PASS and also put a little bit of her earnings every month into PASS. So altogether, she'll be putting $275 into her PASS account. Without a PASS, Larissa does have unearned income. That money her mom and dad are giving her every month to help her out is unearned income for supplemental security income purposes. So that $50 will be reduced by that general income exclusion of $20, and $30 of the $50 cash gifts that parents give Larissa will be counted against the SSI cash benefit. In here, I said she was earning $800, but now she's earning $1,200. She's got an even better job, Larissa. So that $1,200, she can't use that $20 general income exclusion again. So we have to skip over that. She does get that earned income exclusion of $65. That leaves her with $1,135 in countable income. And when we divide that by two, we get $568. Now we go down to that third section. We have to add her countable unearned income of $30 to that $568 to get $598. And when we take that away from the $914, Larissa gets an adjusted cash bonus of $316 in addition to her $1,200 earned income and her $50 cash gift from her parents. But remember, she's got $275 of all that different money that she's going to put into a plan to achieve self-support. So let's see how that $316 looks once she sets up her plan to achieve self-support. Ah, that $316 turns into $631. She no longer has any unearned income because she's using that cash gifts her parents are giving her to put into the PASS. So it's not counted anymore as unearned income. So now she has her general income exclusion of $20, her earned income exclusion of $65, and her divide by two for her in her gross earned income section. That makes her countable earned income $558. When we go down to the third section, we put zero in countable unearned income. Her countable earned income is $558. And now we get to take away the money Larissa has in her past. That's $275. We take that away from the $558, and Social Security is only going to count $283 of her entire income against her SSI cash benefit. So that leaves her with $631 in addition to her $1,200 of earned income. So the past can be an excellent tool if somebody has a really good employment goal and they need to save money to reach that goal, or save money for something that will help them reach that goal, like a car, for instance. Okay. So what happens to your Medicaid when you work? Oh no, I lose it. Nope, you get to keep it. You get to keep Medicaid through 1619B state or individualized threshold. Or if you lose your supplemental security income and the Medicaid that is attached to it and you're working, you can buy Medicaid very cheaply through the Texas Medicaid buy-in program. 1619B state threshold. I told you at the beginning that people could earn a living wage and still be attached to supplemental security income and get free Medicaid. And here's proof of it. 1619B allows you to earn in Texas this year up to $47,107 in gross annual income. That's a living wage. And you can be on SSI and make $47,107. Now, if you're making that much money, you will not get an SSI cash benefit. You'll get a $0 cash benefit, but you're still attached to the system. So if you lose this job or your earnings drop below a certain point, your SSI will just start, the cash benefit will just start up again. But this entire time, your Medicaid is continuing. Good news if your child is on a home and community-based waiver like HCS, CLASS, Texas Home Living, DBMD, yes, STAR Kids or the STAR Plus waiver, is those on 1619B, even if you're making $47,107 gross annual income, are absolutely eligible to receive their waiver services, and they will not have any what they call cost share for those waiver services if they're on 1619B. So don't let that stop you from letting your child work if they're on a waiver. They can still work if they're on SSI and get those waiver services. If you make above $47,107, but you still need Medicaid for something that other insurance won't cover, typically that's personal attendance services or the new generation of psychotropics that people diagnosed with serious persistent mental illness often take, you may qualify for a higher threshold than $47,107. We have customers from VR who have $85,000, $125,000 thresholds. That means that they can make up to $87,000 or up to $125,000, still retain Medicaid, still get their waiver services if they're on a waiver, okay? And if you earn above $47,107 or above whatever your individualized threshold is, and you still need Medicaid, you may be able to get it by buying it through the Texas Medicaid buy-in program. You have to be working to qualify for Medicaid buy-in. If you've earned off of SSI, you are presumptively eligible. That means you're going to get the Medicaid buy-in and you will pay a maximum of $40 per month. And that's a really amazing deal in this day and age for comprehensive health insurance. You can find your Medicaid buy-in application by just Googling the H1200-MBI. And you can read more about that at Health and Human Services Commission's website. Just type in Medicaid buy-in and their website on this will come up. But if the concern is if my child goes to work and they lose their SSI and Medicaid, they have to have that Medicaid, guess what? They can buy it. And guess what else? If they're on a home and community-based waiver like HCS or CLASS or Texas Home Living, Medicaid buy-in is one of the eligibility groups, so they can still get waiver services and be on the Medicaid buy-in. So If wages cause the cash benefit to stop, there's no way to get it back. Well, we just told you people stay in eligibility status even when they don't get a cash check through 1619B state or individualized threshold. And then there's another great work incentive called expedited reinstatement. And expedited reinstatement allows those who are on SSI, whose cash benefits were terminated due to working, due to their earned income, who are not medically improved by Social Security's definition. They're just working, they still have the disability, it still meets Social Security's criteria, but their cash benefits were terminated because they earned too much money and they lose the job. Now what happens? Because their cash benefits were terminated and their Medicaid was terminated. Well, they have 5 years from the month that cash benefit was terminated to request expedited reinstatement, which is a one-page application that you fill out. It's just a one, literally sign your name basically is all it is. Now you do have to submit current medical records and some other information to Social Security, but you get back on to benefits very, very quickly. And during the time that you're applying for expedited reinstatement, the Social Security will give you 6 months of cash benefits and 6 months of Medicaid. And if you are determined medically improved and you're not eligible for expedited reinstatement, you don't have to pay back the 6 months of cash benefits or Medicaid. But unfortunately, less than 1% of all the people who apply for expedited reinstatement are medically improved. We'd love to see more people who are medically improved, but that isn't the case. Most people who apply for expedited reinstatement are granted it. Now, with supplemental security income, especially if the person is young, they may, when they apply for expedited reinstatement, not get back on supplemental security income and Medicaid. They may get Social Security disability insurance off their own work record rather than going back on SSI. And Social Security disability insurance or SSDI comes with Medicare, not Medicaid. But again, the person is working even 1 hour a month, they could buy Medicaid buy-in and get their Medicaid, okay? So working always results in overpayments. Well, it kind of does. Social Security is what we call the worst bookkeeper in the universe, not the world, the entire universe. But and there's a lot of different reasons for that. The most important thing to know is reporting is the single most positive thing that you can do for your child who's on supplemental security income. And as a matter of fact, your child is on supplemental security income, they or you, if you are their representative payee, are required to report their income, earned and unearned income, every single month, no later than the sixth of each month. This is not a suggestion, this is a requirement of SSI. You want to report, however you report, try and get a receipt for it. If you get an overpayment, the letter sounds really scary. It tells you you have to pay it back in 30 days. You don't have to pay it back in 30 days, but you do have to contact Social Security. And there's certain overpayments that can be waived. If the overpayment is $1,000 or less, you can ask for something called the administrative waiver, okay? So the role of the parent in your child's SSI cash benefit, if you are a parent of a child under the age of 18, you are required to report your income and resources to Social Security every single month, no later than the sixth of each month. This is really critical. We see many overpayments for children that come from their parents not reporting their income and resources. And we see overpayments, they're not small. We saw a 15-year-old with over a $10,000 overpayment because their parents had not reported their income and resources. The overpayments of children under the age of 18 are usually the fault of the parent not reporting. Unfortunately, even though it is the parents not reporting the cost of the overpayment, it's your child's debt, not yours. Your child has to pay that back. And there's no way around this. If you didn't report your income and resources, your child is going to get an overpayment, and it probably won't happen until they are over the age of 18, until their record is separated from your record in Social Security. And so we typically see the overpayments from childhood SSI, from parents not reporting, happening when the child is between 19 and 23 years old. Okay. So how do you report? If you're the representative pay, set up an account if you can. On myssa.gov, there's a representative payee portal, and you can report your child's income and resources, as well as your own income and resources on this site. You can use a free app on the Android or iPhone. There's also an app on the phones to remind you when it's time to report. You can call in to a landline and report that way. If you keep a written log, you can mail the pay stubs to the local SSA office, attention the Title 16 claims representative, or you can drop the pay stub off at your local Social Security office if you have time to sit around all day and wait for somebody to take that pay stub and give you a receipt. Okay, but reporting is really important. If you're using a work incentive, the student earned income exclusion, the impairment related work expense, the blind work expense, or the plan to achieve self-support, you must report by US mail or in person. You cannot report by phone or using the app or using the online reporting system. Okay. So again, with supplemental security income in Texas, you get Medicaid. That means when you get SSI, you're automatically awarded Medicaid. But SSI is just one way to get Medicaid. There are many other avenues that a child can get Medicaid. They don't have to get SSI to get Medicaid. There's a great resource called the Pink Book, and there's a link to it here. Or you can call 211 for more information on the many different ways that someone can get Medicaid who doesn't have SSI in the state of Texas, okay? There are people called childhood disability beneficiaries, or CDB, often known as disabled adult child. These are folks over the age of 18 who are drawing a cash benefit off a parent's retirement survivor or disability insurance record. And we'll be talking in detail about this group next month, I think on June 6th with the Consolidated Planning Group. But the important thing to know is if your child is transferring from SSI to childhood disability beneficiary, they're going to probably lose their Medicaid because they're going to lose their SSI, because the amount they're drawing off of your retirement survivor disability insurance record is probably going to be higher than the 914. But if they were receiving SSI, they can keep Medicaid. It's fine. They'll get Medicare through childhood disability benefits and Medicaid. Now, they do have to apply to keep that Medicaid using the Health and Human Services Commission, or HHSC, H-1200 form. If the child was never on SSI and they become a childhood disability beneficiary off of your retirement, or a parent passes away, or parent goes on SSDI themselves, then they're going to get the Title II childhood disability benefit, cash benefit, and Medicare. They won't get Medicaid. But if they were on SSI prior to becoming a childhood disability beneficiary, they can absolutely keep their Medicaid, no matter how high that childhood disability beneficiary monthly cash benefit is. Okay. And again, we talked about the resource limit. Very important that you stay under $2,000 in everything you have, absent personal items like antiques and jewelry. Okay. How are you supposed to figure it out? There are some people here who can help you. If your child is looking for a job or has a job, they can call the, they can get in touch with a community work incentive coordinator at a work incentive planning assistance program. These folks are certified just like NITRA and I are by Social Security as benefits counselors, and they will give free benefits counseling. If your child is a customer with Texas Workforce Solutions Vocational Rehabilitation Services, we will make sure that they will get benefits counseling services. And Andrea Dorey says, do ABLE accounts count towards the $2,000? What a great question, Andrea, and I'm gonna answer that, because no, it doesn't. Up to $100,000 in ABLE savings does not count towards that $2,000 resource limit.
So now there are restrictions in terms of how much money you can put into an ABLE account.
That's true.
Per year. You can use that for.
But the total of $100,000 in savings does not count towards the $2,000 resource limit. And this year you can put up to $17,000. And if you're working and not participating in an employer-sponsored retirement plan, you can put an additional amount in. So that all that money you put into ABLE is not counted towards that resource limit. Good question. Okay, so you can also get help by calling the Ticket to Work helpline. Here's the phone number for that. And these are folks who will tell you basics about supplemental security income, and they can also refer you to a community work incentive coordinator for free benefits counseling if your child isn't a customer of vocational rehabilitation and needs free benefits counseling. By all means, use the Ticket to Work helpline to get that help. Okay. And here's some information on the ABLE account, which we have covered a little bit. And you can see that it's a great, great program. You can join any ABLE account that takes out-of-state residents. Texas has an excellent ABLE account. Certainly, your child could join the Texas ABLE account, but they could also join Ohio's or Colorado's or any state. And there's a national website that has a three-state comparison tool, and you can look at all the different states and figure out which one works best for your child and for your family. So in a nutshell, SSI is determined by a formula, and you always have more money if you work when you're on supplemental security income, and your Medicaid continues until earnings reach $47,107 gross a year, or maybe even higher. So if your child is interested in employment, we can help them. If you think, I don't think my child can work, you might be surprised. We are pretty inventive people and we have lots of resources, and your taxpayer dollars pay for this service. So please use us. We assist people with all sorts of disabilities from the mildest to the most severe to find employment. It doesn't have to be 40 hours a week. It could be 2 hours a week, 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, whatever the person is interested in. And as I said, we pay for many things, including benefits counseling, college, skills training programs. We have job developers and job coaches who help your child when they're first employed to learn the job and to learn the social interactions that go with working. We also offer something called pre-employment transition services to individuals age 14 to 22. And you don't have to be a customer of ours to receive these pre-ETS, pre-employment transition services. You can find your local Texas Workforce Solutions Vocational Rehabilitation Services office by going to the link on here or calling a phone number or going to something called Start My VR, which is an online easy way to apply for services. Or you can just email an email address and find out where the closest vocational rehab service office is and call them and they'll set up an appointment for you. So finally, here's our contact, Nitra and mine, and Nitra who froze up and couldn't talk to you, but and my contact. And we are also available to help you at any time. So
you will get a copy of this recording and the slides. So you can check out the contact information and have that. We do help with ABLE accounts, and we do entire webinars about ABLE accounts, so you can check that out. This is a listing of all of our upcoming webinars. You can look there. This is our fantastic team, and here is how you contact us for your free consultation. We're going to be reaching out to you to make sure that you have all your questions answered and see if you want to schedule this consultation. If you don't want us to call you, then call us and schedule yourself. So there's a QR code you can use, or you can reach us by phone or email. Our YouTube channel is here. It's a link you can click on, and that takes you to all of our past webinars. We keep them there. There's also our Instagram, our podcast, and our Facebook. In this free consultation, we just want to answer your questions. What keeps you up at night? How can we help you? And then we learn about you and your family, and we'll tell you about us and how we work. It usually takes between 30 to 45 minutes, and there is no pressure. Again, thank you so much to Sarah and Nitra for being here today and presenting all of this fantastic information. Check out this recording again later, because I am sure you missed something, even if you were paying attention 100% of the time, because there was so much great stuff today. We appreciate all of you for joining us. Like I said, especially you, Sarah and Nitra. We'll see you again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Bye-bye. Bye.